Okay, Rabosai, let's see where we're up to. And we'll turn to Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis. And we're talking about a shtar that you found. You found a shtar milveh in the street. And the Mishnah presents a machlokes between Rav Meir and Chachamim on the bottom of Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis as to when, under what circumstances, you return the shtar. Rabbi Meir says that we look at the shtar, we read the shtar, and we have to determine whether yesh ba'en achrayis or ein ba'en achrayis. So there's a shtar which generates a shibud, and you could collect that shtar if need be as a default from the lekuchos. And in such a case, Rabbi Meir says, if it's a shtar sheyesh ben achrayis, lo yachzir. We do not return the shtar to the malveh. And the reason he gives for that is because bezdin nifroim mihem. Because if you give the shtar back to the malveh, then it's very likely or possible that bezdin is going to based on the gvias achov, based on the shtar, they'll collect from the lekuchos. So that we're not allowed to do. Because since we found the shtar, we already have a little bit of a question about the status of the shtar, and therefore we're not going to endanger the lekuchos. But says Rabbi Meir, if there's no achrayis in the shtar, and apparently Rabbi Meir assumes that if the achrayis was left out of the shtar, then it basically none. You can be gover from the lover. And only from the lover, but you cannot be gover from lekuchos. And therefore, you can return the shtar to the malveh. Nowhere is Rabbi Meir nervous about the lover. He's only concerned about the lekuchos. We have to understand how that works. The Chachamim say that Bezdin will always use a shtar milveh to collect from the lekuchos. There's always a shibud in the shtar. Even if it's not written in the shtar. So we're not committed to read and interpret the shtar based on the reading of the shtar and which words are in the shtar. That's going to introduce a concept called achrayis tos sofer. And lo yachzir, therefore we can never return the shtar to the malva. We always have to worry about the vulnerability of the lekuchos with neshe bezdin nifroim mihem. Bezdin will collect from the karka of the lekuchos on any shtar, as long as the shtar says that Shimon borrowed 1,000 from Reuven, and if Shimon defaults on the loan, they will collect from the lekuchos who purchased karka from Shimon, even though the shtar doesn't whisper a word about shibud. Oh, that I need. Sorry. Yeah, because otherwise these things just they fall and they fly in all directions. Okay. So let's start learning the Gemara. We got up to the Gemara yesterday. We read through the Mishnah. And we, you know, on the one end, we were happy that the machlokas here between Rav Meir and Chacham revolves around whether Achrayis tos sofer or not. You know, does the sofer have to write to beferish that there's a shibud here to send out what's called a kol so that we can assume that any lokeach would have known about the shibud nechasim? Or do we say that the very fact that there's a shtar on the milveh, even if the sofer made a boo-boo and he didn't write the shibud, all that makes sense. But what doesn't make sense, and that's what we're hoping that the Gemara is going to reveal something, is why bother returning the shtar to the malveh? Even Luya, in other words, both Rabbi and Chacham agree that if the lekuchos were not a factor to be reckoned with, and there was no achray. Again, the Chacham say that there's a shtar, so there's always achray. But if Lu Yitzur, in a theoretical world, there were no achray, it's no collection for the lekuchos, then no one seems to have any compunction in neither Rabbi Meir or the Chacham about returning the shtar to the malva. Well, what about the lover? Well, why is he chopped liver over here? The lover is going to have to pay at the very moment that you return the shtar to the malva. So I'm hoping that we'll have an answer to that question as we go along. Okay. The Gemara starts with an analysis of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that it all depends upon whether or not the sofer included achrayis in the shtar. So the Gemara is bothered by that. V'may yaskinu, what exactly is the case? And again, the Gemara is going to offer a possibility which can make me dance out of and celebrate out of joy, because the Gemara is going to say that maybe the case is that the lov himself is moda. The lov himself admits that he has this chov to pay, and he doesn't have the money to pay it, and therefore, when the shtar is given over to the malve, and it enables him, at least in the case where Christ is written in the shtar, enables him to collect that chov from the lekuchos. Again, unless you assume that the lov is in kahoots over here, right? Chayshin lekinunya, that's going to be a factor down the line. But leaving out kinunya for a moment, the lov is moda. That's the Gemara's first possibility. But mayas kinun ilema kishachay of moda, and that's exciting. Why? Because if the lova is moda on the chov, I can begin to understand why the issue here is purely an issue of lekuchos. It's not an issue of the lova, right? We didn't understand. How could you possibly return the shtar to the malva? He's going to use that as an instrument to force the lova to pay when the lova is yelling, parati, I already paid up. Again, the lova made a big boo-boo. He didn't take back the shtar, or he took back the shtar and he dropped the shtar. That was not a smart move. And he made a double mistake. He didn't get a shovar or a simpon, but whatever it is, maybe he lost the simpon. Yeah, he's a very absent-minded guy. So he lost the shtar. So Gemara says, kishachayev moda. The lova is moda, he's chayev to the malva. And he hasn't yet paid up the chol. And in this case of kishachayev moda, you all right there? Yeah. Who would lose if we return the shtar to the malva? Not the lova. The lova's not going to lose anything. He's moda that he owes the money. But the one who could serve to lose in event that the lova doesn't have money to pay are the lekuchos. So would the hodas bal din of the lova now be chav lacherim, so to speak? Would now impose a chiyuv on the lekuchos to pay the loan in event that the lova defaults on the loan? So the Gemara has a kasha. We can't assume that we're talking about a case of kshechayev moda. Why not? Because then ki yesh bem achrayis nechosam amay lo yachzir. Since the lova is moda on moda, the lova admits that he hasn't yet paid the chov. So what are you worried about? You're worried about that Bezin is now going to be gover from the lekuchos based on the shtar when you return the shtar to the malva. Well, that's exactly what Bezin should be doing. Right? Why? Because the lova is moda that he hasn't paid up the chov. The shtar is therefore a valid shtar, and the shtar has a achrayis in it. So why are you getting all tense and anxious about the lekuchos? The lekuchos should be paying up. To the same extent that the hodas bal din of the lova that he's chayev is able to activate the shtar, because the person who stands to lose most by the shtar is admitting that it's a valid shtar, then let's take the shtar as edus, and let's accept the edus of the shtar without questioning the edus of the shtar. If the lova himself admits that it's a good shtar, this reminds me of another sugya by sheer association of Kiyum Shtaros. The Gemara says in Masechta Ksubas that Modim Shtar Sheksovu Ein Tzarech L'Kayim, that if the Lova himself admits that the Shtar is a valid Shtar, we don't have to bother authenticating the Shtar. So the Shtar is authentic and it's valid and it's kosher by virtue of the Hodas HaLova. It also reminds me of the Mishnah at the end of Bava Basra, that the Lova commissioned two Edim to write him a Shtar, and when the Malva produces the Shtar, the Edom know nothing about the Matan Mos. They weren't there for the Matan Mos. But the answer is that the Lova, by commissioning the Shtar, is validating the Shtar. He's basically saying that if the Malva produces that Shtar is evidence, it's Edus against me that I borrowed the money. Here also, he should be upgraded, his hodah should be upgraded to the status of being machshir the shtar. If you have any questions about the shtar or the lover himself, he's the das hamischayev. He was the one who wrote the shtar. I don't mean physically wrote the shtar. I mean he was the one who commissioned the writing of the shtar. The shtar itself is avos on the hischayevus that the lover told us to write the shtar. And the shtar says he owes the money. If the shtar says that money is collectible from the lekuchos, that's called achrayus, then fine. Why should we have any compunctions or any inhibitions about returning the shtar to the malva? Ve'ikisha ein chayav modeh. So now we have only one, by possible nature, only one other option, alternative, to say that the lov denies that he owes the money. He claims he paid up this chov. And then either he left the shtar in the hands of the malva, or he got the shtar back and then he dropped the shtar. So now we have the lover who's claiming that he paid up the shtar. Now I don't understand here. He just to take a little bit of a break for a second, he quotes a Rashba who says the following. Yesh Levayer, he says, the beer of Nemanis Halove. Now, I don't know what he means here, Nemanis Halove. The Love is denying that he owes the Chov. He's saying that he paid back the Chov. And he writes, Nemanis Halove, he can Nemanuso Bechol Milvav Shebalpeh, Sharei Ein Amalve, Yochel Liton, Shtarchav Yotchem, my boy. Oh, I see. Since the Shtar dropped, oh, I'm beginning. You see, this is what happens when you learn Bechaburu. I just learned an Agadat in Brachos at the end of Masechta Brachos about learning Bechaburu. It gave me a great deal of chizuk. And basically, I mean, in Agadat to the Gemara, usually use extreme language. The Gemara basically says that if you don't learn Bechaburu, it's not worth anything. So here we have a learning Bechaburu. The Rashba is telling me the following. That normally the lova is not believed to say parati. If it was a case of a milbal peh, he's believed to say parati. Why isn't he believed to say parati mil b'shtar? And that's because the shtar chum yodcha, my boy. Yeah, that's because the malva is holding on to the shtar. But in our case, the malva is not holding on to the shtar. So the lova is perfectly neman, with a full-fledged nemanis to say parati. Now, if that be the case, oh, this is our kash. Baruch Hashem, we finally got to our kash. How can we have the gall, the chutzpah, to return the shtar to the malva when the lov is claiming that he paid up the shtar? You're giving basically a very powerful weapon into the hands of the malva to force the lov to pay up. He may have money, he may not have money, but forget about the lekuchas. I couldn't care less about lekuchos. Even the lekuchos have nothing to lose because there's no achrayus in the shtar. According to Rabbi Meir, if the achrayus was omitted from the shtar, the lekuchos are not on the firing line. But so what? How do you have the right to return the shtar to the malva when the lov is believed to say parati? Again, he's believed to say parati because the malva is not holding on to the shtar. Now you're going to give the malva back the shtar, and then the lov, therefore, ipso facto, is not in heaven to say parati. So it's true that since there's no achrayus in the shtar, according to Rabbi Meir, you cannot collect from the lekuchos. But what about collecting from the bnei chori, meaning from the lover himself? How could you return a shtar to the lover? And I'm telling you, Rabosai, I honestly am convinced that if the Rav was here in the Shia, he would say tfisas bala shtar. Which means the following, that every shtar is meaningful and it has a chalos avos b'ksav, but only because it tfisas bala shtar. A person has to be super careful with his shtar. As soon as he drops the shtar, he's in deep trouble. Because the shtar stands or falls on tfisas bala shtar. The tfis on the shtar is basically a tfis on the momen hashtar. You know, now you can collect the momen hashtar. I mean, to such extent is a shita Beit Shammai that shtar homid ligvos kigavli dom. You know, it's already like as if you have the money in the bank. But that's all because you have tfisas bala shtar. So in the case of a get, she produces a get, and we believe that she's divorced. We could be matir her, a former Eishes Ish, based on her tfisas bala shtar. In the case of a malva, he's holding on to the shtar, and therefore we believe him to say that so-and-so owes him money. Why? Because he's holding on to the shtar. The very moment he drops the shtar is not going to testify in his behalf, which means that the lover can now come and say, I paid you back. And he's believed. Again, with all due respect to the Rajba, the Rajba is giving us an explanation on a simple level, on a surface level. It's true. The Rajba is right. That once the Malva drops the shtar, then there's no shtarcha v'yodcha mind boy. But again, you have to understand what the shtarcha v'yodcha means. The significance of the shtarcha v'yodcha is the tfisas bala shtar. So for example, anytime the Mischayev commissions Aiden to write up a shtar, the shtar right now is in potential it's Aiden, but it's not actualized, and the Aiden is only chal when he gives over the shtar.
But it depends on his taina then. Because
correct. If he admits that he didn't pay up the shtar, then the shtar could, he might be able to validate.
I mean, the two what seem like equal tainers are not really. One is paraiti, I paid it off, and the other was I never got it in the first place.
Oh, that's interesting. Tosfos makes that distinction in many places, that if the lover denies that he ever got the money, that's called Ein Yodeh Mischayavti. If the lover says, I got the money but I paid it, that's already Ein Yodeh Parati in the case of what's called a Taina Shem. Right. So we paskin that Baruch Hashem Allah Bari Yodif Lehotzi. The Tosfos says that depends. It's La Bari Yodif Lehotzi if the lover denies that he ever got the money.
Yeah, but if,
but if the lover admits he got the money and he says parati, so if he knows that if he knows for sure that he was parei in the chov, that's one thing, because the milvav bal peh is believed to say parati, amotz mechavel amaraya. But if on the other hand he doesn't know whether he paid up the chov, shon fargesin, you know, I forgot.
Well, maybe he's lying.
So if he says he forgot, that's a taina shema. And we already have an established chov,
right?
Because he doesn't know if he was porei the chov, but he remembers very well getting the money. So now he becomes the motzi mechavel of araya, and the taina shema is not going to be strong enough. Okay, remind me to tell you a joke about ichshav shoyin farges. And I heard a good joke of ichshav. You know this joke? That this guy came in, you know, to Ellis Island, and they gave him the name Ferguson. So they said, why they give him the name Ferguson? That's like a typical, you know, ice hockey guy from Canada. I don't know, whoever he is. So he said that what happened was, back in Europe, before he left towards America, they told him that if they ask your name, so you should say your name is Bergson or Berzon, whatever your name is. So when he got to he asked him what his name is, he couldn't remember what they told him. So he said, Fargesin. So he said, all right, we'll write that down. Your name is Fargesin. Anyway.
Said Sean
Fargesin,
and then we called him Sean.
Sean Fargesin. Sean, S-H-A-W-A.
Tosfos comes to his Rebbe and asks him, on Purim, what do I do first? By the Bechirot or Megillah?
Oh, it's Mamash on Purim?
On Purim.
I remember.
So the Rebbe says to him, you have to do the Bechirot first. Why? Todir v'shein or todir todir todir?
I like it a lot. What a state we're in, right? Great. Okay, let's go on. Truth is, I'm less concerned about the election than I am about this coronavirus. I know this gets me really nervous. Because I got to get on a plane soon for... After Pesach, I'm supposed to be a scholar resident. I don't know.
Oh, residents where? In sin?
No. I'm not that much of a lavamacher. Okay. So Gemara says, Li'olam kishachai of moda. Okay, here the water, the going gets a little rough. So now we're talking about a case where the lover admits that he owes the money. He was not poreh. And the one who dropped the shtar then is the malva, not the lova. So from the lova's perspective, we should certainly return the shtar to the malva. And if that be the case, then the shtar is a valid shtar, because the very moment you return the shtar to the malva, based on the directive of the lova, at that point he has tvisas bal shtar, and now the shtar should be, the lechov should be collectible from from the lekuchos. So why is Rav Meir worried about the lekuchos? Hachayinu taima dechayshinon shema kosav lilvos ben nisan velo lava ad tishrei the osil mitzvah lekuchos shelo kiddin. So it comes out like this, that even though the lova was moder, but nevertheless, the shtar is still, it's still not a knapper shtar. You know, there still is some sort of a race on the shtar. Mm-hmm. If the shtar is being used against the lova, that's no problem. The lova, by his own admission, says that the malva dropped the shtar. But now that the malva is going to use the shtar against the lekuchos, now we really have to be worried. Why? Because since the malva doesn't have tfisus balashtar, the lova could only give the malva a partial tfisus balashtar. He can recognize and validate the shtar as far as he's concerned, what's nogeya to the lova himself, that the lova will not be able to deny the chov and say parati. That's wonderful. But the tfisus balashtar now has much more, shall I say, far-reaching implications, because once you validate the shtar in the hands of the malva, he can collect from the lekuchos. So what's the problem? Let him collect from the lekuchos. I mean, the lova is admitting that he owes the chov, and the shtar has achrayus in it. So from the moment that he received the loan, his land, his karka was leaned. It was leaned. It was meshuba to the malva, and if the malva should be able to collect this loan from the lekucha. So why is Rav Meir nervous? The problem is that we have a mission at the end of Bava Basra, Kosvin Shtar La Malva. I'm sorry, start again. Kosvin Shtar La Lova, Afal Pisha Ein Malva Ima. So we don't know exactly when the Mos reached the hands of the Lova. We know that the shtar testifies on a certain date, but the date in the shtar reflects the moment in time that the lova commissioned the writing of the shtar. And the shtar is now sitting in the lova's drawer. You know, the lova's waiting until he'll receive the loan. And when he receives the loan, at that moment, he gives the malva the shtar. Correct? There's like a trade-off, a swap. The malva says, I'm willing to give you 1,000, but I want a shtar. So the lova pulls out the shtar. The trouble is that the shtar was written 6 months earlier. But the shibud is only chal the moment that there's matan mos. Because a shibud is like a, we'll call it a mixas kinyan. I mean, that's a very rough description of a shibud. But it's some sort of a kinyan. And how are you kona karka? Well, the malva didn't he didn't do lechazek, he didn't do he didn't start plowing the land. So how did he get a kinyan in the land of the lova? The answer is through matan mos, right? So the malva gives the mos over to the lova, and the lova is makna him the karka with a conditional kind of kinyan, which is called a shibud. That in event that I can't pay you with bnei chori, you'll collect from this karka. So the malva now acquires a certain ownership in the karka, but that's only at the point of matan mos. So let's read the Gemara inside. Chayshin and Shema Kosav Lilvos bin Nisan. So let's say about this time of the year, he told the Eidim, he commissioned them to write the shtar. He's holding on to the shtar. But Lamaisa, when was the time of the Alva? It was Tishrei 6 months later. And now the Shiva is only Chal 6 months down the line from the moment of matan mos. But on the other hand, the malva is now holding on to a shtar that's dated Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and the sale to the lekuchos was after Rosh Chodesh Nisan
and before Tishrei,
and therefore the lekuchos really are off the hook, right? Because there wasn't matan mos yet. Or if you look at the shtar, you know, and you compare the date of the shtar to the date of the Mekach, the date of the purchase of the karka, it looks like the Shiva was chal.
He's on the hook.
Right, he's on the hook because the Shiva was already chal before the purchase of the karka. But in truth, now again, you might say Well, we have a concept called Tfisas Baal HaShtar. Mm-hmm. So the Baal HaShtar has, you know, has a right to assume that his rights against the Lekuchus begin from the date that's written in the Shtar. Because once he holds on to the Shtar, he activates the testimony of the Shtar to the best, to his best interest. And the Shtar will say, well, immediately with the writing of the Shtar and the testimony of the Edom with the date of the Shtar, that's immediately when the Shibud was Chal. And that would happen under normal circumstances when the Malva has a Tfisas Baal HaShtar. But in this particular case, the Malva lost the Shtar. The Lov admits that the Malva was the one who lost the Shtar, but as far as Lekuchas is concerned, we don't know. There's like a race on the Shtar because the Shtar was lost.
Right.
And once there's a race on the Shtar, we cannot assume that the Shibud was Chal immediately on the date that's recorded in the Shtar, because maybe the Matmos took place 6 months later. I'm not sure why the Gemara has to use 6 months. I think the Gemara is just trying to sort of dramatize it, that there could be as long of a six-month delay in the handing over of the Mos of the Chol, which means that for that half a year there was no Shibud on the property because there was no Kinyan.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the Shtar would mislead us into thinking that the Shibud was Chal on the date written in the Shtar.
Normally when there's Lekuchos, when he sold the property,
yeah,
wouldn't he ordinarily write in a Shtar, he guarantees there's no Shibud on it?
Well, there's such a thing as a Lokeach. You're talking about the Lokeach now?
No, I'm talking about the Mocher would tell the Lokeach. He would write to the Lokeach, assure him that he's selling him unencumbered property.
And that I don't know. That you're asking me a kasha. But I thought the answer to your question is what's called achrayas, meaning the mocher, in this case the malva, he'll write achrayas in the shtar mecher, which means that in event that the bezdin will confiscate your shtar that I'm selling you, I'll reimburse you.
That's two sides of the same coin.
So that's and then again we'll have the same machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachom about whether you apply Achrayis Tos Sofer in the case of the Shtar Mecher. So for example, the Chachom will say that even in the case of a Shtar Mecher, Achrayis Tos Sofer, and every Shtar Mecher has a built-in, an assumed Achrayis, that the Mocher will, in an event that there's a lien on this karka that I'm selling you, I now am meshabbing myself to reimburse you if in event that karka was taken away. So the Gemara asked the obvious kasha, Yehochi kol shtar yosi l'kamon, nefesh l'hochi, since the testimony of the shtar and the date written in the shtar never convinced us exactly when the Matan Mos is, right. Because kosvin shtar lo v'afel pishen mal v'evo, so we never know exactly. So then we're always asked to be, let's just undermine the whole institution of Gvia Milukuchos. Why? Because when the malva comes with the shtar, we should ask him, well, you know what? Maybe the date on the shtar is accurate in terms of when the Lova commissioned the writing of the shtar, but it's not at all accurate in terms of the Matan Mos. Maybe the Matan Mos took place 6 months later. And Rabbi Moshe, what's going to be the answer to this question?
This shtar fell.
Exactly, so and there's good. No what? There's no Tfisas Baal HaShtar. So when is Tfisas Baal HaShtar, then the shtar is made on behalf of the Tofes in any question that might come up vis-a-vis the shtar. And we're always going to be machsher the shtar. I always like to compare it to a tudat heksher, right? If you walk into a restaurant and the tudat heksher is reliable, you know, you should check it out to make sure it's not like 10 years old. I'm just exaggerating.
Start mukhtam.
So it's reliable. Then that means you could ask 50 million questions. You could ask about the milchus and fleishigs, and you could ask about did they do malicha? Did they do trumas and maestras? You could keep all the answers are always letzad ha'echsher. Why? Because the rabbis that are signed on that document, hopefully, can testify that everything was done kedasu kedin. Same thing operates with the shtar. Any question that you'll ask on the shtar, the validity of the shtar, because the shtar again has achrayus, which means that the malva has rights to collect from the lekuchos, and that achrayus, if you have any question about it, will always be machrias akaf in favor of the malva's ability to collect from the lekuchas with this shtar. So if there's a question about, you know, the date of the shtar, if it, maybe it's before the matmos, then we're always going to be machriya in favor of the malva that's called tfisas bala shtar. That's the magic of a shtar. The Rav used to say that Rav Chaim used to say the shtar ret, the shtar speaks. You know, any question you ask the shtar has an answer for you. And the Rav used to say that before Rav Chaim, a shtar was a chasva b'alma. You know, Rav Chaim breathed life into a shtar. So I wonder if it's in this volume. You know, there are two volumes of this. I'm interested in Zimun, but in one of the two volumes, he has a whole piece on Tfisas Bala Shtar. No, I guess it's in the other volume. It's not here. So this is volume 2. I have volume 1, but not with me today. So in volume 1, the Rav has a lecture that he gave on, you know, Gimel Shvat for the yahrzeit of his father. It's called Osios Nikdos B'Mesira. And it's an amazing halacha that we don't paskin necessarily like Rebbe, but Rebbe holds that if I want to sell you a chov, so let's say Ploni Almoni owes me 1,000, that it's written in a shtar, All I have to do is hand the shtar over to you. You'll pay me whatever you'll pay me. You're not going to pay me the full 1,000. You'll pay me a slashed price, but whatever you'll pay me, you become the proud owner of the chov by virtue of the fact that I handed the shtar over to you. That's called Osios Nikdos B'Mesira. And the Chacham rejected. So all the Rishonim go to town over here. How could Rebbe say Osios Nikdos B'Mesira? The name of the lokeach who bought the chov is not even mentioned in the shtar. The whole edus of the shtar is on the mocher, we'll call him Ruvain, not on Shimon who bought the shtar. So the Rav said, Tfisas Bala Shtar, that who's ever holding on to the shtar, he activates the shtar and its edus on his behalf. And the very fact that he has the shtar in his possession, again, I'm giving you one little tip of the iceberg. I mean, the Rav spoke about that for 4.5 hours at a yahrzeit shiur, but it's written up in the other volume called Osios Nikdos B'Mesira. And the Tfisa on the shtar, and that's basically the yesod of get. Get is really a shtar kinyan, but it also serves as a shtar raya. That's only if you have Eri Chasima. If it's only Eri Mesira, we pass like Rablozo Eri Mesira Karasi, then the shtar is not, there's no din of Tfisa's Bala shtar. You basically need 2 Edim who testify on the giving of the shtar. There's no Edim in the shtar itself. Then the shtar is really a chasper v'alakib shuta. But if you have Edi chasima, then the shtar takes on a whole new meaning. In addition to being a shtar kinyan to effectuate the gerushin, it now becomes in her hands a shtar raya that she's no longer an eishes ish. Now, if she drops the shtar, that's a real problem. So Beis Din today, I don't know what it was like back in the days of the Chachamim, but in today's Beis Din, they actually give her a different shtar called a Peturin, and they have a copy in the Beis Din of the Peturin, and all this is to try to guarantee that in event that she doesn't have the get, because today, I don't know if you know, they don't give out gittin. Anybody know why? By the way, I'm just curious if you know why. Why don't they allow her to keep her get at the time of the Chazal?
She'll lose it.
No, they give her a get p'turin, but she wants the get itself. Can't have it. She can't have the get. You know why? Because k'dei lahotzi shelo lahotzi las. What does it mean? Every get has all sorts of complications. That's why to be a Masada get, you have to take at least a 2-year course. How to write the names, and how to spell the names, and mechuna, and miskere. And the most complicated issues in the get are how to write the location. So, for example, Columbus is on a river. I forget if it's called the Columbus River or the Ohio. I don't remember the name of the river. But anyway, there was a whole to-do about how to spell the name of the river. Now, the Masada Gittin in Columbus, Ohio, for an entire area, his name was Rav Grunwald, and he's long gone. He wrote a book on Avelus, the Kolbo and Avelus, a classic. Now, after he died, they wanted to continue being Masada Gittin, but they needed to get access to his Gittin, because they wanted to see exactly how they wrote it. And all his Gittin were in a file. What they do is they, you know, they slice the get, you know, with the scissors, but you can still read the get. And I don't want to get into politics here, but his Rebbetzin would not allow them to get access to the Gittin. So I don't know what it is today, but for many years they were not Masarig Gittin in Columbus, because they never knew exactly, because once you have a tradition of how to spell something, you can't change that tradition. So Gittin are very complicated, but the reason why we don't give out the get is because somebody's going to look at the get and say, hey, wait a minute, they wrote the wrong name on the get. I tell you, Rabbi, you won't believe this, but within the last month this might happen, not in the get but in the ksuba, I had a fellow who gave me the misima to rewrite a ksuba of his in-laws. I mean, his wife, the daughter of this couple, is a major member of our community. She's always here every Shabbos in this room organizing our kiddush. And her parents' ksuba, they miswrote the name of the father of the isha. That's a psul in ksuba. We had to rewrite the ksuba. How are you Masadar Ksuba and get the name wrong? I mean, the whole purpose of being Masadar Ksuba is to get the names right. I'm not talking about spelling now. They had the wrong name.
Wrong name altogether.
The wrong name. Somehow what happened was the father of the Kala was asked by the Masadar Gittin to show them his Ksuba. And again, his ksuba went probably dated back to, I don't know, 100 years ago. This is his parents' ksuba. And they mistakenly wrote his name. They wrote his father's name instead of his name. Why? Because the guy got somehow, again, I don't know what happened, but this is, in South Africa 50 years ago. But they're living in sin because they don't have a kosher ksuba. So you see this concept of lahotzi las, that you could say, well, I look at the get and I say, wait a minute, they made a mistake. It's gan shayach that a mistake was made.
So Rabbi, in where we used to live in Sharon, very easy name, Sharon, there was a park nearby that people like to have weddings in, and it was called Borderland Park. So there were four towns that came together, and where they put up the chuppah was in, I forget if it was in Norton or something like that, and they had no Masorah, so they picked up the chuppah and they moved it, 50 meters into Sharon, and it was no problem.
No problem. It's really, really interesting.
My son had a problem with the person that wrote the ksuba for him. His name was Ari Melech. There's two Ari Melech, two names. And he put it, one name was Ari Melech. And
is this such a name, Ari Melech?
It could be anything these days. They didn't discover it until the night before the chuppah. And they had to find out somebody to do it. And then he has a whole explanation at the bottom of the thing that says it was written Ari Melech, and that the name should be Ari Melech.
I mean, they couldn't rewrite the whole song?
No, they couldn't. There was no room.
When you say there's no room, I mean, why didn't they just take out a piece of paper and rewrite the ksuba?
Well, they could have done that. No. They did it, but they didn't.
So the Gemara says, Kol Shtari Lo Rei Mahani Rie. So there's a Rei. So again, what the Gemara means is, once he drops the Shtar, we don't know whether the Zman of the Shtar is testimony on the Matan Mos, and therefore we wonder if maybe the Matan Mos took 6 months down the line. So the Gemara asks, how are we doing, by the way, in the clock? We're okay. Ela Hadisnan. Oh, here's the mission at the end of Masechta Bava Basra. It says, Kosvin shtar lo vafel pishein mal ve'imo. Is l'chadchila heichi kasvinu. Right? Nechus shema. Right? Kosav lulvos b'nisam v'lo vav tishrei. In other words, why do we want to get into this whole problem here with the possibility of being mafsid the lekuchos by writing a date in the shtar and giving the misleading... In other words, again, it doesn't say the Mishnah that the Lova has to guarantee that the Malva gets the Shtar on that very same day. If you would require the Lova to...
Zero or something like that.
Right, if you require the Lova and say, look, we're going to give you the Shtar this morning at 9 in the morning, but make sure before Shkia today you give over the Shtar, you give over the Shtar to the Malva, and you... So this has to do with Eidah Bechasumav Zochinlo. Okay? Right, we're not up to that yet, but so the Gemara says, Nechush Shema Kosevil Vasidisla Vela Kishav Yossi Laku Lemitrif Lakucho Shalom Kiddin Amar Avasi. And here we turn to Daf Yud Gimel. Amid Aleph, Bishtori Hakno, the Hashabe Nafshe. Now, exactly what Shtori Hakno means, we have a major machlokus on that. We're going to learn Rashi here. Rashi says Shtori Hakno, Shemakne Lo Nechosav Me'ayom. So what exactly is the kinyan here? I mean, with, you know, he didn't get to Mos yet. You know, to be Machne Karka, you need Kesef, Shtar, Chazoka. I don't think that the Malva made a Chazoka on the Karka, the Lova. So what does he mean? Does he mean there was a separate Shtar? There was a Sudar? Maybe he was Machne Shibudin with a Sudar? What exactly does Rashi mean when he says Shemachne Lo Nechosav? Like, what method of kinyan did they use? So the Rosh claims that they use the shtar itself. Why? They're going to, according to Rashi, they're going to write the shibud in the shtar, and once they include the shibud in the shtar, then the shtar functions as a shtar kinyan on the shibud. Not the way I told you before that the man Mos clinches the shibud, and the Malva acquires ownership on the karka of the Lova through Mos, through Kesef. But no, then that could be the way the Gemara understood it originally. But now the Gemara is saying Hachmayaskinon, that when the Mishnah stipulates that the Lova could commission the writing of the Shtar, and that Shtar in the hands of the Malva will give him ability to collect from the date of the Shtar, that's a case where the Shibud was written in the Shtar, and the Rosh interprets the Kinyan as being a Kinyan Shtar. That once you add the Shibud into the Shtar, like for example in the Ksuba, we mentioned the Shibud in the Ksuba, at that moment the Shtar itself serves as a Kinyan, because Karka nicknames Bekesef Shtar of a Chazaka, and the Malva gains a Kinyan on the Karka of the Lova. That's the way the Rosh interprets Rashi. Shashibud Azeh Nichta Bishtar. And then he says that the Mesiras Hashtar not only accomplishes a Shtar Raya, in which the Malva now could prove that the Lova didn't pay up, but it also serves as a Shtar Kinyan to clinch the Shibudim. And Vigorem Sheyetze Kol V'yedu Alekuchos Mikach. So this is unbelievable. The halva took place 6 months later in Tishrei, but the karka of the lova is mishubenes to the malva from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And why is that? Because Nisan is the date in the shtar, and shibud is written in the shtar. I'm not following it. I don't really understand how that operates. I mean, he's saying it creates a kol. I mean, yeah, it's wonderful that you created a kol, but the Malva didn't get the shtar yet. The Lova's not an idiot. He's not going to give over the shtar until Tishrei, when he gets the box. So how does this Kinyan shtar effectuate a Kinyan just because the Lekuchos have heard about the shtar? I don't chap. I must be missing something here. I'll read to you the language. He says, Harosh bir b'divrei Rashi. Again, we're trying to figure out the top Rashi on Yud Gimel. Shemakne lo nechosav me'ayom. Well, let me start. Lo mevur. This is before the Rosh. Lo mevur ma'wa kinyan hazeh. V'divrei Harosh nirek shebir divrei Rashi sheshibud ze nichta v'shtar. That the shibud is written in the shtar. Again, once again, we're going to have to raise the dust on the whole issue of Christ Tov Sofer. But right now, we're talking about a case where the Shiva was written in the Shtar. Okay, so the Shiva was written in the Shtar. Therefore, what? Therefore, the Malva gets a Kinyan on the Nechosim. The Lova hasn't even given the money yet, and certainly he doesn't have the Shtar.
Which shtar are they talking about?
We're now talking about the shtar milva. They're going to write the shibud in the shtar milva, but I don't get it. He goes on to say, "V'ugorem sheyetze kol v'yedu alekuchos mikach Afal pishlo hois alva. I don't get it. If there was no alva, the malva is not holding on to the shtar. So by what, by virtue of what kinyan, does the malva get the shibudim? I don't.
Because the shtar being the shtar they're talking about is the shtar of the kinyan karka.
Yeah, but the malva doesn't have the shtar.
So it's putting everybody on notice. From this moment,
is that enough? That's a pellet to me. You put the lekuchas on notice, and now you collect from the lekuchas when the malva doesn't even own the karka. Yeah. And it's a pellet to me.
The lekuchas knew about it when they bought.
No, that I understand. I understand 100%. The rush is saying that the kol goes out once the eidim signed on the shtar. I can understand that, but. You no longer could fault the lekuchas for buying this karka, but that's not enough. To allow collection from the lekuchas if there was no shibud, meaning unless the malva acquired ownership in this karka through hilchas shibudim, now when he sells the karka, the malva could collect from the lekuchas if need be. But you have to effectuate a kinyan. So I don't understand this rush; it totally flew above my head. But then he quotes a Rashi elsewhere, and Rashi elsewhere seems to. Clarify this. Rashi says, "Shekanu miyada," which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, we'll research this. Is what's called a kinyan sudar. So there was a separate kinyan, not in the shtar, that was made between the lov and the malva, or perhaps the edim representing the malva. Because maybe the malva is not there, but the edim will represent the malva. They'll take a kabbalas kinyan from the lova. On the shibudim, so that I understand. Now the kinyan can be chal even without the matmos, because there's a separate kinyan on his karka.
Why would he do that?
Why would the lova be so magnanimous to do that? I'll tell you why. Because he wants to be able to use the shtar, and the malva is going to say, "Well, I want a shtar." He says, "Mashmi midivrei Rashi she." There's a separate kinyan on the shibud. Yeah. All right, Rabbosai, we'll have to stop here because we ran out of time, which I'm happy about because I don't understand this. I don't understand this sugya. But Blineder, will between now and tomorrow, we'll have halonas adin, if you know what I mean.